Come back on the record, and are we up and running? Okay, our technical glitches have been solved. So today we have House Bill 189, Management of Sustainable Salmon Fisheries. And Representative Stoltz, would you come forward and present your bill? And just for people online's information, we're taking public testimony today after the presentation of the bill, and we'll probably take testimony in the future as well. And we're not planning to pass the bill out today. Go ahead, Representative Stoltz, welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Seaton and members, and not today, but look forward to that day. Thank you. I really thank your consideration, the committee's consideration for bringing this issue, allowing us to bring this issue before the public. It's very seldom that the majority of the users in the salmon industry get a chance before a legislative forum like this on an issue that's important to them, and I sincerely thank you. That's
thank you. And before you start, let me just recognize that we've been joined by Representative Johansson.
And again, thank you. It's this is very important to the users I represent, and more importantly, it's important to the resource. I think everybody at the table believes in sustainable policy. I think the devil's going to be in the details, as we'll find out in public testimony. And that's because I don't think anybody is going to say they're against sustainable policy, but just how it's implemented, and we'll hear that through the process, as you know. And I'll also put the caveat that, looking around the table, there's members of this that have far more experience in fisheries issues than I'll ever have, who have lived it and worked it and breathed it. So after my introductory, I'll have Mr. Mulligan, my staff, take over on the bill and also rely on the testimony of the citizenry that are going to be speaking on the bill. The policy was originally adopted by the Board of Fisheries in 2000, and a culmination of a lot of work done by individuals, and particularly former board member Dr. John White from Bethel, who had concerns about regionalized escapement goals and the inconsistency that created between regional management areas and sport fisheries groups were certainly the first to endorse this, and it was a contentious process established on the board as a board policy, and it's certainly an issue that commercial fishermen have been either from emotions range from wary to just downright flat out opposed and drop dead against it. So it's certainly has contentions in some parts, but the policy was crafted as a result of a lengthy process with the input from user groups, and I think had a basis in science, which is the most important aspect of any fisheries policy, in my estimate. There have been attacks on the board policy by some fishing entities in the state, and we want to make the issue more permanent in statute, and I think it's a good policy, and we want to make sure it's an enduring one to ensure that we have sustainable fisheries in Alaska. It's certainly I'll put the bias of my region, we're at the very end of the game, Mr. Chairman. It has to get through a lot of walls and roadblocks and death traps or whatever the terminology is, and through some real challenge. That fish that gets up there is probably a pretty crafty fish if he's gotten past all you guys in the first place. And then we have to try to catch him for personal use and with all the other challenges we have. But it's at the end of the terminus. That's where my biases come, at the end of the whole stream, I guess, as it were. So, I think it's safe to say there's been some neglect of more than a little of the very end users and the personal use users and subsistence users. Well, there's not on that. So, those are. But Mr. Chairman, my major concern is having sustainable fisheries and for all Alaskans, irrespective of what user group they are.
Well, thank you, Representative Stoltz, and, you know, I think everybody here is wanting to make sure that there is sustainable salmon, and it's, as you readily identify, it's the devil's in the details as to how we get there, and so we'll be looking at it closely. Representative Ledoux.
So how does your bill deal with, differ from present policy?
Well, I, and Mr. Chairman, if I, on the detail, I have a, by fortune, I have a fisheries biologist with a lot of who attends all the regional game fish advisory committees. Can I invite Mr. Mulligan up to get into that devil of details?
Well, that would be fine, Representative Stoltz, if your staff is available. There, you can pull the chair up. Good morning. Would you go ahead and identify yourself on the record, and then...
For the record, my name is Ben Mulligan, staff to Representative Stoltz. Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, could you repeat your question, please? Just one more.
I just, as I'm wondering how, if this bill were passed, what changes would be made? How does this bill differ from what the present policy is?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, by placing the policy into statute, it holds the department a little more accountable right now. After having discussions with members in the Department of Law, right now with regulation, there is some leeway. With statute, the department is more accountable to following this policy. If something happens that comes around that they don't follow one of these principles, in regulation, there's not, in the past, there hasn't been as much accountability as there would be under statute.
And a follow-up, Representative Ledoux.
So what sort of accountability are you talking about? You say there hasn't been as much as there would be if it were in statute.
Well, for one example, if there is a blatant disregard for the policy, a citizenry who feels that in their, at least for their fishery, if something's gone wrong, they could possibly bring a lawsuit to file. Or they can come to their legislator, as a lot of people do, and say, listen, this is what has happened in our region, this is why we believe it. And with a lot of people, the legislator will go to the department and hold them accountable and say, listen, this is what it says in statute, what is going on. And a lot of problems are solved that way.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Johansson.
Thank you. Statewide sustainable salmon fisheries policy is basically what we're talking about, right? You're going to codify this. Currently, as it stands, is that a document that is has been amended since 2000? I mean, is the process of this set of policy and rules, has that been shifted around? Any liquidity to the language since 2000?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson. I'm not really sure about that. We should have Lance Nelson online, who could probably answer that with Department of Law.
Okay. I guess the reason I asked
Representative Johansson
is the differences between coming to this body and changing something that may be a problem, or doing it at the board level is kind of what I'm looking at here.
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, while there should be some movement for regulation, but it's the sponsor's belief and a lot of people's belief that there should be some underlying structure that holds. I mean, you have skeletal structure, the regulations mete out how policy is conducted. There should be that underlying factor that maybe, if it does need to be changed, needs to go back through the process. But based from that, there's going to be regulation based on specifics that can be changed by Board of Fish.
Can I just follow just very briefly, Mr.
Yes, go ahead.
And I just,
Representative Stoltz.
Mr. Chairman, I think one of the reasons we're putting statute forward is, frankly, in the regions in South Central Alaska and others, there's a lot of public pressure to do this, and there's, frankly, a lot of folks want us to do this by initiative, and we all know the problems and the inflexibility in that process, and I think we're getting to the point where there probably is political viability of the initiative process, but I don't want to do our game and fish policy by initiative, and that's we're trying to do a responsible method through the committee process, and that's the short answer of addressing the fluidity and the liquidity of the process and having the ability to go through the tough questions and answer it through science, not through television commercials or just sheer might. And I think, as I respect the resource more than I do the user, quite frankly. I mean, it's, I think everybody have an opportunity, but if we don't have the resource, then that's my larger concern. And with that, I just wanted to say that before I had to leave, Mr. Chairman. So.
Okay, thank you. And let the record show that Representative Wilson has joined us, and now we have Representative Ledoux and then Johnson.
I'm curious, so if this law went into effect, can you tell me one or two examples of where something would have been different in the last 5 years?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, you know, I don't have a specific example because with regulation changing the statute, we don't know how it would apply. With all things, you have your idea when you come in to craft any legislation, whether it has to do with fisheries policy or anything. You craft it and you have an idea of how it will apply, but until we actually get into a real-world situation, I can't answer that question.
I guess what I'm just trying to figure out is exactly what problem it is that we're trying to fix. So that's why I'm looking for some sort of an example of where something was broken.
Through the chair, I can give only an example.
Excuse me, would you go ahead and identify yourself back on the record again?
For the record, my name is Ben Mulligan, staff to Representative Stoltz. I can only give firsthand information for our district and our region is, and this has been a long issue and we're trying to solve this other ways, but in the Upper Cook Inlet, Susitna Drainage has failed to meet escapement goals for sockeye salmon 4 out of 5 years. That would propose a problem, and by strengthening the policy and the statute, the representative feels that it would force the department maybe to look at that a little more seriously than they have in the past, where they've just lowered the escapement goals in the past.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So my understanding of what this legislation does is it basically just puts in statute the policies that the Board of Fish is using now?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, we originally, when we first drafted the legislation, looked at all the principles of the policy to put into statute and realizing that wouldn't be effective. Like I had mentioned earlier, we picked out those core principles that we felt guided management and felt that those were the principles that should be set into statute, and then from there all regulation would be based on that.
Follow up, Representative Johnson.
And I guess this may be a yes or no, fairly simple. The Board of Fish is utilizing this policy now, and we're just going to put it into statute. Will this statute change any of the regulations that are codifying any of the regulations or disallow any of the regulations that the Board of Fish is using? I just want to, the difference, what I'm looking at is the difference between if this were enacted today as opposed to the regulations we have today, what would be the impact of that, I guess?
Through the chair, some of the regulations would have to be modified because they would now be in statute and they'd be flushed out maybe a little more fully into regulations. So there would be probably adoption of some more regulations based on this. But for the most part, the policy is already fleshed out in regulation right now.
Ben, I had one question just to follow up on Representative Ledoux's question. So if this was in statute, your example of a weak stock in the far reaches of Upper Cook Inlet, then the impact of this would be then that citizens could go and sue to or challenge any commercial fishery south of the Susitna River and would have to close down all of the commercial fisheries until there was the depleted stock be allowed to recover, or, I mean, your example was part of the Susitna River, whether it's Jayentna that's been failing or something else. So if instead of looking at the river, you would look downstream and say that the all of the regulatory actions would have to be taken for that, for this, because it would be in statute. Is that what I'm understanding?
Chairman Seaton, that certainly would, might be an option, but also, as is in the bill on page 2, section 3, for could be an action plan for if they determine it to be a stock of concern, which could just be as we don't know yet because we don't have all the information, wouldn't be an immediate shutdown, as in this case we're doing catch and recapture work, weir work on those lakes, and then just getting them to be more proactive could be the first thing to find out what we really know about the drainage, and then figure out what needs to be implemented for effective management. Now, whether that is determined to have windows down some, down the inlet, or maybe restrictions on certain times, that is certainly a possibility. But if not, you're looking at depleting a stock further up the waterway in order for other people down below to fish.
Well, I guess I'm trying to figure out, following on Representative Ledoux's question, those things that you're talking about are happening right now, identifying the stock, doing research, catch and recovery, and all those based on this being the board's policy. But putting it in statute would then give another layer of citizen complaint or override. Isn't that where this is really what this allows?
Through the chair, I wouldn't see it as complaint or override. Any time that your citizenry has an extra chance to redress what is going on in government is a good thing, I believe. But what is going, this took years to enact right now. I grew up in the Matsu Valley. As much anecdotal evidence as I've heard through the years about our fisheries being impacted by fisheries down the Cook Inlet has been around since I knew how to fish. But getting Fish and Game to do this, took years. We had runs 4 out of 5. Then we've had to pressure them to have meetings up in our district in order to address these issues so the citizens could actually come. We had to have a meeting redirected up to the valley about Susitna because they wanted to have it down. First one was down in Kenai. Now, for a normal person, you can't drive down to Kenai on a weekday after work and then expect to get back without spending a lot of money for a hotel. It's something that we feel that, if you strengthen it into statute, that maybe it wouldn't take years to address.
Representative Johans.
Is this new ground we're covering here in the Board of Fish and the Board of Game? is any policy by the Board of Fish or Board of Game for management of any fishery or game stock, has that policy been codified in any other place in the state?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, I do not know the answer for that. I can get that answer to you, but I do not have it at this time.
Thank you.
I just had a couple other things. One is that the legislature has continuously, over the years that I've been here anyway, been trying to give the Board of Fish flexibility to, we passed laws to take the 58-foot limit out of statute and pass that to the Board of Fisheries. We've passed things so that they could stack permits and then people could apply for additional usage of those permits. It seems like that this is a directly counter to the flexibility that we've tried to provide to the Board of Fish to manage our fisheries in the most appropriate way with broad public input on the specific issues. And it seems to be taking us and saying we as the legislature want to now in fairly fine detail establish how the fisheries are going to be regulated. And I'm just trying to figure out why we are taking the opposite tact, or why this bill takes the opposite tact than we've been doing for a number of years here.
Through the chair, I guess my only answer can be is that it's like Representative Stoltz had said, that initially people have wanted to put this through as a petition And, I mean, talking to our local ACs, that they feel that some of these issues that are in here are not being addressed through the board. And, you know, another way for the public to try to get their voice heard is through their representative. And that's what I know Representative Stoltz is just trying to do in this process.
Sure, and just to make it clear, I'm not at all questioning that. I'm just trying to look at the policies that we've adopted through statute in the last several years as far as flexibility of the board. And I guess the other question that this relates to that we talked about with the commissioner designee when we had a committee overview of his qualifications, and that was the tension between the designated emergency order authority to manage the fisheries versus board policies, and where that comes down as far as having to manage a fishery in season versus a broad general policy from the board. And is it your understanding that this, if we put it in statute, would limit the commissioner's authority to use emergency orders to open fisheries based on in-season response, or that he would have to respond basically only within these conditions of depleted stock management?
Representative Seaton, that is a good question, and to carry out policies, the department's duty, and I think the commissioner designee would probably be the best person to answer that question, because I couldn't give it to you right now. It's not something that we've looked real hard into, but it's something that we can get you an answer for.
Okay, I appreciate that, because there are two different roles, and one is to institute policies of the board, and the other is to fulfill the duties of the commissioner to do emergency by emergency orders to do in-season management. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my question is that I think a lot of us have responsibilities to try to figure out how this will affect our areas, and I am concerned that it could change some of the practices. So I'm leery right now, and I feel uncomfortable just because I don't know all the answers, and you haven't been able to answer it except what your thoughts are on as far as the Cook Inlet goes. And I need some time to really think about this and think about how it would affect my area.
And we have a number of people online, and I think that some of those will be there, and we will get the commissioner designee to come give us his opinion as well as other folks. And Representative Wilson, I think you came in late. My intention is not to move this bill today, but to get the discussion going, because it is a very complicated and wide-ranging subject that can have lots of implications. Are there further questions for the sponsor before we go to public testimony? Thank you very much, Ben. Appreciate it. And if you're going to remain around, we might have some more questions for you. Thanks. We now have in Kenai, Ricky Geese. Are you online?
Yes, I am.
Ricky, would you go ahead and identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony?
Yes, my name is Ricky Geese. I'm the executive director of Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. It's a pleasure to speak with you today on this issue. The sustainable salmon policy is really a great thing for the state of Alaska. The goal is to ensure conservation of salmon and the required marine aquatic habitats, protect customary traditional uses and other uses, and sustain the health of our fishing communities here. It has basically five fundamental principles, basically wild fish and habitat, spawning escapements, effective management systems, public involvement, and precautionary management. Now, this policy took a long time to get into regulation, and at our last Board of Fisheries meeting, there was an effort to repeal this policy. It was voted down, but there's been some discussion on the board level and with the Department of Law of whether or not policies can be in regulation. So I think it is incumbent upon the legislature to give the authority to the Board of Fisheries to have such policies as the sustainable salmon policy in regulation. There's also policies such as the wild trout policy that we went through an exhaustive public process that also need the security from a legal perspective that you authorize the Board of Fisheries to have these types of policies in regulation. We can discuss whether or not, you know, the legislature needs to, how much wording in that authorization needs to be in statute versus in regulation on the Board of Fisheries. Language could be as simple as the Board of Fisheries will have the following policies in regulation, a sustainable salmon policy, a wild trout policy, a sustainable escapement goal policy. So what the discussion came up at the last Board of Fish meeting is that there's a lot of other regulations that are tied to the sustainable salmon fisheries policy, and there's been kind of a flip-flop on the legal opinion of whether policies can be in regulation or should be standalone policies that guide regulations that the board puts in place. The importance of the sustainable salmon policy to Alaska, I think, for the commercial fisheries cannot be underestimated. One of the emerging markets that is really coming into being for our commercial salmon markets is certification through the Marine Stewardship Council. One of the reasons why we get certified by the Marine Stewardship Council is that Alaska does have a sustainable salmon policy in place in regulation, not just as a policy that could be put on a shelf and ignored, but that there's something in regulation. And I think the one of the goals of through public testimony and this effort here is to ensure that this policy will stay in regulation. And if we can keep our eye on that and maybe give the Board of Fish the tools and the security to know that they can keep this policy in regulation and that they are on firm legal ground in that regard, I think we'll all be more effective in the long run. I know there's some other comments, and I'll keep my testimony short on that regard then. Thank you.
Thank you, Ricky. And I just have one question for you. Is your testimony then that the Board of Fish should have the ability to put these in regulations, or are you agreeing with this bill that we should take the authority away from the Board of Fisheries and do it in statute?
That's for you to go up into discussion. Right now, there is a legal question through Lance Nelson brought up at our last Board of Fisheries whether or not the board has the authority to put such policies into regulation. And I would like to either see, whichever way we go, through your committee and through your discussions here, I would like to see that this get on firm legal grounding so that the board has the authority to put this policy in regulation. And if we conclude that the board does not, then I think it should definitely be in statute.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, let's go to Virgil Oppenheimer. I'm sure I messed up your name there, Virgil. In Fairbanks, would you identify yourself on the record and who you represent, and go ahead with your testimony?
My name is Virgil Oppenheimer. I'm in Fairbanks. I'm representing the Fairbanks Advisory Committee today. I served on the Board of Fisheries from 1994 to 2002. I was one of the people involved in the sustainable salmon policy getting developed and put into regulation. I can answer a number of the legislators' questions. When we started working on the sustainable salmon policy, what prompted that was a number of things, and one of the biggest things was that in different parts of the state, the management policies of the department differed, and they differed so much that in some areas we had different definitions of various terms, such as what is a management concern, what is a conservation concern. In Southeast, there was a definition. There was a definition for, say, in the Arctic Yukon-Kuskokwim region that differed. And so what we decided to do, myself and a guy named Robin Samuelson, a former board member from Dillingham, we wrote what we thought was a good definition of what sustained yield was. I brought that to Dr. White And Dr. White says, no, what we really need to do is we need a sustainable salmon policy that outlines definitions of various terms throughout the state and how we want our regulations, a basis for promulgation of our regulations. And so we spent 4 years. We had a number of public meetings, committees formed, all kinds of people involved. And this is what we finally came up with, was what's in regulation right now. I think it should be in statute. I'm 100% behind it being in statute, and I'll tell you the reason why. The reason why the Fairbanks AC wants it in statute is because a policy can be ignored by the board. They can actually ignore a policy. They don't have to go by it. And the best example of all is king salmon on the Yukon River. In 2001, the Board of Fisheries took action to address the declining size and runs of king salmon on the Yukon River. Then in 2003, after myself, Dan Coffey, and John White got off the board, the department, they interpreted what the board passed in 2001 different. And so that was challenged by myself because they were violating the regulation that got passed in 2001 in the management of king salmon on the Yukon River. So what we did is the Fairbanks Advisory Committee put forward a proposal. The department gives the board misleading information at times, and it's based on escapement goals. But what this new policy, or this what this proposed statute addresses that, and it addresses it in item C3. It says diversity shall be maintained to the maximum extent possible at the genetic, population, species, and ecosystem levels. We were speaking to the genetics of the king salmon. The king salmon on the Yukon River in the early 80s, as high as 3.5% were 8-year-old king salmon, and 28% were 7-year-old king salmon in the commercial harvest. Today, for the last 15 years, the 8-year-old king salmon have been extinct. They're totally extinct. They're gone. The genetics of the 8-year-old king salmon is gone from the Yukon River. The 7-year-olds currently are down to less than 1%. They went from 28% to 1%. So if this goes into statute, then that will require the department to manage for genetic diversity. And that is an example, and that is one of the best examples I can give you as to why this is necessary.
Thanks, Virgil. And Representative Ledoux has a question.
I guess I don't understand the concept of genetic diversity in your example. Doesn't a 7-year-old like have the same genes as an 8-year-old or a 6-year-old?
No, they do not. And there have been numerous studies done by the world's leading scientists and scientific institutions that demonstrate that the age that salmon return at is genetic.
Okay, thank you. And we've been joined by Representative Holmes, and follow-up Representative Ledoux.
Then if a 6-year-old becomes a 7-year-old, do their genes change?
What happens is king salmon return between the ages of 3 and 8. And so if a king salmon that's 6 years old spawns, when she spawns, the majority of her offspring, if her eggs are fertilized by another 6-year-old, will be 6-year-old king salmon. But if a 6-year-old king salmon, if her eggs are fertilized by a 4 or 5-year-old king salmon, then 4 times as many 4 and 5-year-old king salmon will return.
Thank you.
Thank you, Virgil. And I guess my only question is, it seems that under this requirement, or if we put this in statute, then what would happen is if there are not very many 8-year-olds, the department would be forced by some citizen or group of citizens that are going to file a complaint would be forced to close the entire river fishery to maintain that diversity in 8-year-olds, and I'm just trying to figure out how that, why that's beneficial from a Board of Fish perspective.
If you go to item 3 at the bottom of page 2 of House Bill 189, it speaks to action plans. It says action plans shall be developed for stocks of concern. And then it goes on to outline what an action plan is going to consist of. And it's going to consist of making up a plan, analyzing what the problem is, what measurable and implementable rebuilding goals and objectives would be, and how and what the different options are to get to these rebuilding goals and objectives. And it's not closing a fishery. It's maybe nothing more than changing the size of the web in a king salmon net. That may be all you need to do. And there's studies been done all over the world on all kinds of different problems. And so that would only cause the department to bring to the Board of Fisheries an action plan with various options to address the problem. It would require them to do that, not to, to close the fishery.
Well, and thank you, Virgil, and I guess that's just a question we'll have to debate here, because as I read it under Section C, there is, it says that the management shall be based on these principles, which, you know, there's another Section D that says the Board will develop management plans, but since we are, we'd be putting in statute that the management shall be based on these principles, then this citizens or a group of citizens, whether it's a conservation group or anybody else, could sue the state in, for in-season management based on the principle, violation of the principle, and I think that we'll be looking at several things. But we'll look at that as we go through, and hopefully some other folks from law will help us there. So there's no, are there questions for Mr. Oppenmeyer? There is a Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under the scenario that you gave, that the it's genetics, genetic diversity, that it should be based on, it seems to me that it's possible that everything could be put in place and we still would not have what you want, the 8-year salmon, because we can't control which fish fertilizes those eggs. And so we could do everything, shut down everything, and it still might not happen.
We can control what fish get to the spawning grounds, and you do that through fishing practices and methods and means.
Okay, thank you, Virgil.
Thank you.
Let's go to Matt Sue, Larry Engel. Larry, are you online, and can you?
Yes, I am. Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
We sure can. Would you go ahead and identify yourself and who you represent for the record and proceed with your testimony?
My name is Larry Engel. I live near Palmer, and I'm here representing myself. I'm a retired fishery biologist and a former three-term member of the Board of Fisheries. I served with Virgil Oppenmeyer, who you just heard from. I'm here primarily to provide some of my insight into the development and implementation of the existing policy to help the House Committee understand how it was developed, where it's at, and some of my feelings relative to this existing regulation. As we heard earlier, the initial attempt or the catalyst for developing a statewide policy for salmon, sustainable salmon, came because the board, as they traveled throughout the state, heard various versions of what a conservation concern was, definitions of escapement, and it was dealt with, these concerns dealt with quite differently throughout the state. So that spawned the idea of developing a statewide policy for sustainable fisheries. In 1997, the board and the Department of Fish and Game developed a joint committee to write this policy. And during our three-year period, the joint committee issued numerous drafts of this sustainable policy as it developed and distributed statewide. We held more than 30 meetings throughout much of Alaska. And one of the reasons we used a three-year time span to work on this policy, that allowed the board through its normal cycle to move throughout the state. So the issues were discussed in our regular cycle meetings from Nome to Ketchikan during that three-year period. In addition, the board convened a public advisory panel to help work with this development of the policy, and that included all different stakeholders from subsistence to catch and release salmon fishers. And the department also convened a technical advisory panel that consisted of biologists within the department, other scientists in the state, federal, and even had some outside consultants work on this advisory panel. So I believe the policy as that we have in regulation today was developed through a very, very thorough public and technical review process. And as we heard earlier, it was adopted into regulation found in Title V of the Fish and Game Code in the year 2000. So we've had over 6 years of to look at and evaluate this particular policy. Shortly after the policy was adopted, it was recognized with an award from the Western Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies. And this includes all the western states clear back into the Rocky Mountains and the western Canadian provinces as a kind of a major milestone in the way states deal with the sustainable fish and wildlife. I think that the policy updates and strengthens some long-standing principles of salmon management. But I don't think that's the real importance of this policy. I mean, the principles that we've heard of earlier today are kind of like motherhood and apple pie in my mind. You know, you have to maintain habitat for the salmon if you expect them to propagate. You have to have spawners. You have to have public involvement. And you have to use a fairly conservative approach when you lack information. I don't think anybody can argue with those principles.
Excuse me, Larry. Let me interrupt for 1 minute. I think we have somebody online that is not on mute, so... If someone else is online that's not on mute, would you please mute your phone? Sorry, we were getting a bleed over from another. So excuse the interruption. Go ahead, Larry.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. As I was about to say, I think the most important part of the existing policy is that it requires both the board and the department to follow an identified systematic process in evaluating the health of the salmon throughout Alaska. The policy mandates that the department must provide the board at its regular scheduled meetings with reports on the status of the salmon stocks in their habitat that they are considering at that respective meeting. The policy further defines a process for identifying stocks that are not meeting escapement goals or achieving harvest expectations, and requires both the Board of Fish and the department to develop action plans to rebuild those depressed stocks. And these action plans may include, be as simple as just identifying some restrictive management measures, or they may identify needed research or habitat issues or habitat restoration. And another important part of the policy, I think, is that it identifies three levels of concerns. And these concerns range from things like yield concerns that are least severe and to conservation concerns where the fish are about ready to leave the planet, and also management concerns which are intermediate. So I think those are some of the strengths of the policy, and I think that it has worked well. I was involved with implementing the policy for 3 years as we traveled around the state identifying various stocks of concerns and how to deal with those particular issues. So I think that's a whirlwind tour as the development of the policy, how it was developed, and some of my views on the strength. As far as the issues that we've been talking about this morning, I would say a year ago, I wouldn't think it was particularly necessary to have the policy placed in regulation. But because it's coming under attack by some of the stakeholders feeling that it threatens their fisheries or could cause certain legal challenges and fishery decisions be made in the court, which to my knowledge have not occurred during the 6 years the plan's been in effect, I think maybe it would be appropriate to place it in statute. Because the existing policy that went through this long, deliberate process to be developed that is based on sound scientific principles, provides for open and free public access to the decision making. If that can be eliminated by a vote of four individuals on the Board of Fisheries, and we go back to ground zero, by placing this into policy, or at least clarifying that the board supports this, or that the legislature supports the sustainable salmon fishery in some fashion, it would be far more difficult for this thing to be scrapped. So I guess with that, I would stop and answer any questions.
So Larry, I guess I'm just trying to get a clarification. Then you think that the Board of Fish should be prevented from ever addressing or modifying any of these details of these management plans in the future? Is that your, and that the legislature should take that regulatory or that ability to address elements of these policies out of the Board of Fish's hands? Is that correct?
Absolutely not.
Well,
I don't believe that at all. I think that the existing policy that's in regulation or any regulation that's on the Fish and Game Code should be subject to change and adjustment by the Board of Fish. That's the process. The process has worked well, and we have healthy salmon and trout stocks throughout the state because of this. What I implied was that I feel that if the entire policy and its implementation aspects and the systematic approach to evaluating the health of salmon stocks and do it in a similar manner throughout the state is very important, and that if that was to be completely eliminated, that this systematic approach, which is found in the Sustainable Salmon Fisheries Policy, then I would support it being placed in a stronger language in statute that we do gauge our salmon resources in a systematic way against the principles that we've been talking about.
Okay, I think that many of us would agree with your statement there. If things were repealed, then it would come to us. But what we have before us is a bill that would take it out of the hands of the Board of Fish, would institute it in statute, and the board would have no flexibility to address those regulations because it would be in statute and not before the Board of Fish. So I think Representative Ledoux might have had a question for you. No? Thanks. I just wanted to let everybody know that we're going to lose our quorum here in just a couple of minutes, so we're going to take this bill up again on next Monday. And so I'm sorry that we don't have the ability to keep going today, but Friday we're having a tour of the DIPAC hatchery, and so we'll meet here and go there, and then this bill will be the first on our agenda next Monday, but we're going to have to break because we're going to lose a quorum here for consideration of the bill. So thank everyone that's online, and would you please call back in on Monday or come back in person, and appreciate everybody's testimony. And with that, we'll be adjourned. Thank you very much.